Good evening, everybody. This is Leica, and this is another episode of the None of the Above show, about everything non-mainstream. And tonight, I'm interviewing someone that I met earlier this year at Florida Intensive Rope Experience. And I want to plug that convention for a little bit because it's put on by some cool people I know. And they hold it every year. Let me see if I can get a website real quick while I'm talking. But it's basically a convention for people who are into cool rope stuff. So if you into BDSM and you're into rope and you want to check out that kind of thing, find a website for next year's real quick. Found an Eventbrite. I don't see a website. But I think it's fireorlando.com, fireorlando.com. And I know there's always announcements on the Woodshed Orlando's homepage. So if you go to thewoodshedorlando.com, announcements are posted there as well. So, Catherine, how are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty good so far. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I've been rushing around all day like normal, but here I am on the show and here you are. And I'm super excited because we tried to pull this off a few weeks ago and we couldn't get our schedules lined up. And that was partly my fault. So I do apologize for that. But I'm really excited because one of the things that I've wanted on this show since I started it earlier this year was some BDSM education type material. So I'm really excited to have you on tonight.
Well, thank you.
So then, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say I've been doing rope, so it's kind of and I like teaching about it, so it's kind of a great opportunity. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad that you could be on the show. So something that I guess maybe first, I'll let you just introduce yourself briefly, however much you want to say. Just say a little hello to the audience, and then we'll kind of get more into like what bondage is after that.
Sure. So I am one third of Bad Kitty Bondage. The other two people, one is Diana, who's my roommate. And if you want, I can ask her to come in. Not sure how much we want to do rope or trans issues or what, but if you want to do more of the rope stuff, I'm more than welcome to ask her to come on it. And she's been doing this with me since 2012. Another girl, Diana, Tina, joined last year or so to kind of help out with some of the bottoming stuff. So it's been the three of us. So as a group, we've been kind of teaching the stuff at some cons, and we teach a lot locally. As far as me, I've been doing rope since I was a teenager. It's just been something that's always been involved in all of my relationships, and it's just always been there. So,
very cool. If you want to bring her in, because we can hit on some trans stuff and we can hit on some rope stuff. Both are very relevant for this show. I don't know if you really had time to check out, but kind of a little blurb I have about it. Bring it up real quick. You would think I would have this memorized, but I don't. None of the Above show on sfdradio.com has interviews and discussion with kinksters, transgender folk, cam girls, BDSM educators, fetish models, and plenty of other amazing non-mainstream people. And kind of the focus of the show is anything that's indie, anything that's different. I had a person on here on my first episode talking about polyamory, and I want to have another interview on that at some point. So I'm probably going to plan one of those, you know, soon. Hint, hint to anyone listening. If you present on polyamory and are interested in chatting on the show, if not, I know some people in the community who do present on it. So, if you want to ask her if she wants to join us, that would be cool.
She's actually right here.
Hello.
Oh, perfect. Awesome. So now we have two thirds of Bad Kitty Bondage on the show.
Yeah.
Meow.
Meow. Yeah, does Bad Kitty Bondage have a website if anyone wants to check out the website?
You could go to www.badkittybondage.com. You can go there, and from there you can find our FetLife profile. I'm pretty active on Twitter. Diana isn't so much, but I've kind of been slacking off on the Twitter thing recently,
it gets exhausting going down on Twitter. I was I've been telling people recently, Thanksgiving Day, I had a bunch of trans exclusionary radical feminists and anti-trans activists hitting me up with some nice, charming, not really, messages on that holiday. So that was fun. I don't blame you for not being as active on Twitter lately.
Yeah, it's kind of exhausting. Just like,
oh yeah,
it's exhausting. So kind of, I go on there every once in a while, check my messages. I don't know how often Diana checks hers.
Hardly ever.
But mostly I use it for event promotion and stuff like that. We got a couple of events lined up. I don't know if we can officially disclose anything, but there's some really great events coming around, so I encourage people to check those out.
And look out for announcements
of when we're going to be presenting.
Presenting type events that you're planning on doing?
There'll be at least two of the bigger cons so far that we know for sure.
Gotcha. All right. And that's your Twitter is KATH_A_RIN, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. So if anyone wants to keep up to date on announcements for that, then they can follow your Twitter too.
Or just like see all the ridiculous stuff that I post in between, like goats and kittens.
There's nothing wrong with kittens, and I think that is very fitting for Bat Kitty Bondage to post cat pictures. You know, it makes sense.
I also post a lot of transgender stuff because I maintain a transgender blog outside of the Bad Kitty Bondage stuff. I have a blog that I've been running since I started transitioning, probably around 2008. It's called Silly Trans Woman. If you Google that phrase, you'll find it. But not bondage related, but there's a lot of information there. We can get back to that later on in the interview if you want. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. We'll hit on that a little towards probably the middle towards the end of the interview. So sure. I want to talk a little bit about because it's kind of hard to demo rope in a radio interview. So I want to talk a little bit about things like what makes a good bondage scene, a good bondage scene. And the reason that I want to do that is my personal experience. I started hanging out at the Woodshed a little over a year ago. I don't know, maybe like a year and a few months to kind of get myself involved in the local BDSM community. And from there, like watching some of the rope scenes, taking interest in it, because I'd been interested in bondage, but not so much in rope in particular, until I started watching some scenes and watching the intensity of them, because the interpersonal dynamic always impressed me a lot. Like, I wasn't so impressed with fancy full suspension, you know, tricks and transitions that were, you know, completely done in full suspension. That's not as cool to me, but, you know, maybe I'm just coming from a different angle, but I always really liked watching the connection between a rigger and the person being tied. That really struck me, and so I started hanging out at the Kaijun Baku Rope Dojo, kind of bottoming, and then I started getting into topping a little bit as well. And it's really fascinating because rope requires a lot of concentration from the rigger, so it can be really interesting in terms of making it a good scene. And making it a really memorable experience for the bottom. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on what makes a good rope scene.
So I'll let Diana take this one first, actually.
Okay. So like you said, I mean, it's all about the dynamic and the connection between the two people, but ultimately you have to know what each person wants to get out of it, because there's oftentimes you'll run into people who don't actually want that interpersonal connection, and then it just makes it awkward for everybody. So, you know, if you're well matched on whether you're looking for power dynamics, if you're looking for shame play, if you're looking for some very deep, sensual, emotional, erotic connection, if you're looking for roughhousing, you know, I think as long as you're well matched in those respects and you're able to channel that energy, you're going to have a pretty good scene. But with that in mind, I think you also, it's good to have your whatever forms you're going to use sort of down to muscle memory. So you're not having to think about the rope, because I think a lot of time people get caught up thinking about the rope rather than thinking about the person that they're playing with. So if you can have the rope things just go to quick muscle memory, then you can focus more on that connection with the person.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I'd add to that is, you know, just kink in general. I kind of say this every time, a variation, we get this question of a variation of it almost every time we do an interview or every time we're teaching a class about the topic. But kink is this interesting space where we're doing very erotic, sometimes sexually charged things with people that maybe we're not necessarily sexually or erotically interested in. So it can get kind of strange, right? When you're in those type of situations. So this goes back to what Diana was just saying, is you got to have the same expectations. Like if you go into a scene and you're looking to, you know, like, I want to have an orgasm and this is going to be amazing, and the other person is just like, I want to practice my TKs, you know, that's a recipe for disaster, right? And at the worst end of that spectrum with miscommunication and expectations, you can have consent violations going into those type of situations and all sorts of crazy things. So it's important to really talk about that, you know, and it's just in kink in general, like just making sure that those expectations are there. Yeah, we actually were just thinking, we're coming up with a class based on this type of stuff. So on how to form like a really good scene and different things that we do. One of the things I really like to do is kind of look at it as a, just as far as structuring the scene, looking at it kind of like I'm writing a story or a song. So you have different parts, right? You have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You have a climax. You know, just the different literary and musical elements you have in different things. So to kind of putting those together to make a story for your scene, that's important too. Because if not, it's just a series of random events, right?
That's really important. And that's something that, you know, extending to any scene, like you said, if you look at it as what story are you writing?
Yeah.
Because communication is absolutely such an important part of kink. And something that a lot of people, you know, who come into it, they've seen like BDSM porn. And let's say over an hour time span, someone has 15 minutes of negotiation, 30 minutes of play, and 15 minutes of aftercare. Out of all of that, you would probably end up with 10 to 15 minutes of what you could bill as BDSM porn. So a lot of people come into dungeons and they're not really expecting all the other stuff, you know,
yep,
all the
exactly.
Easing up to the intensity and then the building back down, all the negotiating beforehand, you know, the comforting afterward, the follow-up a couple days later to discuss like kind of everything that played out in the scene. That kind of stuff, like people don't expect. So it's really good.
Yeah. Or it just gets glossed over. Some people,
right.
Whether it's that they're new and they don't know, to ask these things, or maybe it's just like you meet somebody and it's just a really high intensity conversation and it's going like a really good date and it's just, everything is just happening, you know? So sometimes those things get glossed over and that's, you know, that's just the way that it is. But you know, it's important to keep those things in the back of your mind, right?
Absolutely. Because there are people that I can just like hop into a scene with, but I've played with them before. And then sometimes, you know, I'll have played with someone maybe once, but I've watched them play a shitload of times. But yeah, like anytime you're coming into any new type of play situation, it's really important to establish where you're trying to go with it with the other person, because not meeting someone's fantasy expectations can be kind of crushing.
Absolutely. And I don't think you need to go like as granular as like, okay, I'm going to tie a Futamomo first, and then I'm going to tie, you know, I'm going to do these sequence of ties. Just having an idea, like, you know, like a theme, like, is where I kind of do how I do mine. I mean, Diana, do you do something similar? Or?
Maybe. I mean, depending on the person. I mean, depending on if the person's more of a masochist or a submissive or is into degradation, you know, that's gonna shape the themes and motifs that I use in my scenes. So, you know, if I want someone to feel sort of ashamed and exposed and vulnerable, then obviously I'm going to tie things that maybe spread their legs open, expose their breasts, their genitals, things like that, versus if I want them to feel sort of...
Or partially remove their clothes.
Or partially
remove their clothes. Which can be more effective than completely removing somebody's clothes.
So you can use various devices like that. Or if you're doing something degrading, do something with their face smashed against the floor, you know. So, I mean, you can do rope bondage for all of those things, or you can make it really mean and sadistic without necessarily making them super submissive. So, you know, it just depends on where you want to go with it.
Yeah.
And then, like Kat was saying, using sort of the notion of a plot to sort of gauge the pace of your scene. You know, some people are good with fast-paced scenes. Some people want, you know, slower build-up. And, you know, for me, that comes with reading body language and knowing my play partner.
You don't have to skip. You don't have to keep exactly 2 years. If your theme is not working, and, you know, this isn't a football game where they say you come out with your plan and you just stick to it. And no, I mean, if your scene idea is just like bombing, you know, just do what feels, you know, within what you guys negotiate, like just do where it naturally feels like it should go. And that could be, it should naturally is wrapping up. I've had scenes where I've done that, where it's just like, this is not working. And it's just, you know, you just wrap it up without being jarring, you know? So it all depends on how things are going. You just, and that comes with that doing stuff. Like, there's only so far you can go with clinically tying the same tie over and over again on a person. You know, at some point, you know, it's hard to gauge, you know, where that line between a scene and play, I mean, where a scene and practice is sometimes, but, you know, it goes back to expectations and communicating. So I guess we're just making a circular discussion here.
Well, no, and I mean, it's a good point, like, 'cause a lot of times what's more effective in a scene, is not things that are technical. Those can be extremely helpful depending on where you want to go in a scene. But what's more effective in a scene is having an idea of where you want to go. And I had someone that I was dating, and he wanted to do this kink night at a swingers club. And so we ran this thing a few times, and he asked me.
Diana can tell you about that.
He asked me to present on rope, and I'm like, I really don't know that much rope, but I did it anyway, but about the only thing I felt qualified to really present on, and so this is what I really mostly focus on, is the communication that rope can be between a top and a bottom, because I think that's a really important, you know, kind of ground rule for building a good scene.
So what, you know, what Diana mentioned earlier is, when you practice different things, like for me, every once in a while I'll pick up a rope and I'll just start tying like single columns on myself, because that to me is like, when I'm doing a scene with somebody, it's all based on single columns and just like locked off half hitches. I'm not doing a lot of crazy, crazy ties. So I just let my muscle memory take care of the tying, and I concentrate on where I want the rope to go. So I'm not like, and if it may be that a complicated form that people teach is the right tie for what I'm doing and is what I feel, but it's more about learning those basic elements and then just letting your body do the tying without telling it what to do. It's just like kind of just like anything else. I mean, when you don't think about riding a bike, when you know how to do it, right? I mean, it's it just comes down to getting a hang of things.
Yeah, and you don't need complicated ties to have a good scene. I mean, you can you can communicate and cause all of the feelings, you know, without even tying a knot if you really wanted to. And, you know, for me, it always comes down to what do you want your bottom to feel? And is your bottom feeling what you want them to feel?
I've watched Diana do scenes with somebody with like one piece of rope and not even tie it on them. Just like,
oh yeah, absolutely. Sometimes the hottest thing is the anticipation of being restrained more than the actual being restrained. And you can really do a lot with building up to that sense of restraint. And you can even go so far with it that you don't even have to restrain someone and they will have that sense of being restrained because you've built that anticipation up so much. Just like sometimes, you know, when I know someone's going to put me into a chest harness and I feel the rope going across my chest, that is like one of the most intense parts of it for me.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of things you can do playing with the tempo and the texture of things and like just untying and retying and untying halfway and retying it a different way or.
And then the way you hold the tension on your rope. So one of my favorite things to do when I'm exerting dominance and I want to convey that the idea that the person is mine for the time being is while I'm tying a chest harness or untying a chest harness is I take that rope that's across their chest and I use it to pull their body and smash it completely into mine as hard as I can.
And you guys can't actually see her acting this stuff out, but it's kind of amazing to watch. So,
but you could do things like that or in the midst of tying or untying, running the rope through the person's mouth and gagging them with it. And just to make sure that they know, yeah, you're mine. You're only talking if I want you to.
Yeah. And you don't always have to tell the truth too, right? You can put a crotch rope on somebody and then take it off and tell them, oh, I'm going to stick this nasty rope in your mouth now and just like sneakily behind their back, grab another piece and stick it in their mouth. Or you can put that rope in their mouth. I mean, you know.
So I want to ask a little bit about.
Diana is stepping away to get food first. Diana is stepping away to go get our food. So
no worries. I want to ask about kind of what you think makes BDSM fun and interesting. And I know we've gone into this a little bit in terms of the communication and build up in a scene. And something that I know for me is there's a little bit of a sense that, you know, things are kind of forbidden or different. And that kind of like a little bit of weirdness or a lot of getting to play with emotions in ways that don't show up in vanilla interactions for mm-hmm. me are things that I think make BDSM fun and interesting. So what would you say on that?
Oh, geez. So rope is part of who I am in terms of kink, right? I teach rope and I'm speaking for myself here, not Bad Kitty Bondage. I teach rope. I've been doing it a long time. People know, oh, that's Cat. Cat does rope, right? But it is just like one little facet of who I am kink-wise. As far as like for me, what is BDSM and what makes it interesting to me, it's the idea of playing with dominance and submission. Control for me is really big. I really like it when the people that I'm playing with feel like they have given up control to me. And that to me is a turn on, is when I know somebody has not just given up control of their body, but specifically given up control and autonomy to me. And rope is a way to do that, right? So when I tie somebody up, that gives up their bodily, you know, their movement to me. You know, and I like to play with other aspects of that too. I like all kinds of creepy. There's not too much out there. Like I like blood play, I like vomit play, I like pee play. like all of those things, but they all have this sense of control, right? If I make somebody throw up, they're losing their bodily autonomy, right? They're giving me control of the contents of their, you know, what they can keep inside of them. So to me, that is my fundamental, like, idea. Diana has, I'm sure, a much different answer for this question. But the question was, what kind of makes BDSM interesting for you?
Oh, God.
Right? Open-ended enough?
That is extremely open. I like too many things, I think, to give that a coherent answer, but I'll try. Yeah, I think ultimately it all comes down to power exchange for me in one capacity or another. I'm very much into objectification and the idea of using a person. So that's, I think, one of the big running themes in my personal kink life. Although, like, sadism and masochism definitely play into that as well, which can be independent of power dynamics. Just depending, which gets at the switchy part of me that wants to hit you and be hit by you all at the same time. I don't know. I feel like I have too broad interests.
And there's a lot of crossover there too, because like my sexual interests don't always necessarily intertwine all that well with my kink interests. You know, my sexual interests are far more primal, like predator prey type. Leans more towards that. So it's really an open-ended thing, but it does bring up the interesting point of, like, I don't want to say pigeonholed is the wrong word, but getting known for something, right, is really hard, because then, you know, people don't ask you to do the other thing that you might be interested to do, which is unfortunate sometimes.
So. Yeah, I actually one time I had approached you know Lunatic, who presents
mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a really good guy.
I approached him about doing a scene and having him flog me, and he actually got excited because he's so known for rope that he never gets asked to do anything else. So he had a lot of fun flogging me, and that was really cool.
It's exciting when somebody comes up to me and asks me to do something other than rope. I'm like, yes.
I'm the same way because I started off as an impact player, and so when we lived in San Antonio, I was known for doing impact play, and then Bad Kitty Bondage sort of took off as we moved to Chicago.
Yes,
and then
very interesting dynamic we had back then.
Yeah, and then everyone sort of knew me as a rope person and primarily a rope bottom because of all the photos that we did together. So it went from
which was strange because she was my dominant. And I was an impact bottom.
So we started off with her being my submissive / impact bottom, but doing rope topping on me and me being our rope model for photos. And then, you know, so I have this sort of toppy persona in Texas, and then moved to Chicago, and everyone has only seen me in these rope photos bottoming, and then they suddenly were assuming I was her submissive instead.
So somebody asked me at a club if they could play with Diana, and I was just like, sweetie, you have this backwards. Like, you, no, don't ask me. So it's interesting.
Okay, my connection dropped out for a minute, so sorry you guys were on your own just for a second there.
Did you hear any of what we just said?
I'll listen to the recording.
All right.
So, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Internet is not always a perfectly stable thing. So I usually Skype into the studio because it's like a couple hours drive for me. And in fact, the only time I've ever physically been there was just the other day when the flagship show Slings, Flings, and Dinglings did its 100th episode, which I think is getting replayed again tonight for anybody who's listening right now and wants a really entertaining, nice long episode later. That's going to be on at some point, getting replayed. So let me bring back up my questions I had for y'all. Okay. So how did y'all get started presenting on rope? And I know you started saying a little bit about it when my end cut out and you had moved from San Antonio and Bad Kitty Bondage was picking up. And so you were kind of getting known for that. When did you start presenting on rope?
So we started presenting in San Antonio. When I came out publicly in the scene, it was at this dungeon that's no longer there in San Antonio. It was a great space, but unfortunately this craziness happened and it's no longer there. But the guy who used to run it, he was in the kink world for a long time and he could see that I knew it, you know, I knew what I was doing and I had been doing it at that point for, you know, my whole adult life, like I said. So he kind of introduced me to some people, in Houston and, you know, was like, you should go out to this, performance that they're doing and you meet some of these other, riggers that are going to be there, and everything else. And he had one of the guys come down and I met him. It was this, really cool guy named Jake Kimbaku. He's from, I think he's still in Houston. I haven't talked to him in years, but he's he was a cool guy. He came down. He invited us out to the performance, invited me out there. And then I needed a bottom to go out with me. And I had just met Diana. But we kind of hit it off real quick. Yeah, like we were tying. And I asked her if she wanted to take a couple hour drive out there. And that's kind of where we started talking about, like, I really like to teach. She liked to teach and she was interested in learning rope and everything else. And that's kind of where the teaching aspect came from. The Bad Kitty Bondage group, like the name and everything, came not too long after that, when after people started seeing us perform and teach at the local dungeon.
Right.
We got asked to do a weekly performance at a goth night in one of the clubs in San Antonio. And we're like, sure, why not? They're like, you know, we can't pay you, but there'll be, you know, any tips that you get are yours and probably get a free beer or whatever at the bar. So we're like, yeah, we're in. Like, well, what's your name? And I was a kitty, so I was a cat. I was Diana's cat, so she just was like Bad Kitty. and that's kind of where it came from. Gotcha. The name just came out of there. But it kind of started with the teaching and the photography and the performances. All kind of started independently but merged into this one umbrella. And it fluctuates. Sometimes we teach a lot more than we do photography and performances. Sometimes we do a lot more photography. So it kind of fluctuated. And then we started taking pictures of other people. And Diana really started getting into tying. And she really found that she, I guess, I let you speak for yourself here.
I love it for its own reasons. My scening is very different than my tying I do for photography, because that's more of an artistic expression on my end.
Right.
But so like my tying, like Kat was saying, I could do a scene with one rope and be fine. And in fact, I think I just did that this weekend, an entire scene with one rope.
I think it's interesting to see. Sometimes you go out to the club and you see people perform, that was a slip, but it's actually what I was going to say. You see people playing with rope, but they're actually just trying to perform for people.
Right.
Going back to what we were talking about, how to make a good scene, that's a really good way to not make a good scene.
Oh, absolutely. It's just like, you know, the positions that you do in shooting hardcore porn, a lot of them are not particularly pleasurable or comfortable. They just happen to look good on camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes if you have, like, I've had bottoms who really just want to do the showy kind of suspensions that are really acrobatic. And if so, that's great. Then you both get a chance to, you know, be a little ham and be a show off. And that's fine too, if that's what you both want. But if, you know, you're trying to be
hotshot rigger and your bottom really wanted some emotional connection, then that's not going to bode well for your scene.
Yeah.
Which is why it's important to discuss where you both want to go with it, like you were saying at the beginning.
Expectations. But no, as far as to what we were just talking about, though, but like Bad Kitty Bondage just kind of came out from there. And then we taught at, I think Bed was the first big event that we taught at when it was new. I think that was the first like big con that we ever taught at.
ShibariCon.
Then we taught at ShibariCon, and just we've been teaching at a bunch of different events since then. So yeah, last year was really busy. I think we did 6 conventions and like 5 or 6 conventions throughout the year, and a bunch of smaller things around here in Chicago. We just taught. We're lucky in Chicago to have this group called Chicago Rope. Mm-hmm. They put on a monthly workshop, and it's usually 2 classes, 1 beginner, 1 advanced. Their beginner class runs through this like 4 class cycle where they teach the basics to get people into Shibari, and it's really great. I mean, the way they run it, they get in good presenters, but they just had their 2-year anniversary. We taught the very first class at the very first Chicago Rope. We were lucky enough to do that, and we were lucky enough to teach at the 2-year anniversary. So that was this month, right? Yeah, that was earlier this month.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
good group of people. If you're ever in Chicago and you can get to one of their events, it's always a good time.
Yeah, there's a possibility that I'll be in Chicago getting spit roasted for hardcore porn sometime early next year. So I don't know how free I will be during that trip, if that still happens, but I'll try to check it out.
I mean, you could get spit roasted while in Rope.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That doesn't fly at every dungeon, though. So, but that's a thought.
We're lucky enough to have a pretty liberal dungeon here. So
that's cool.
I've done some pretty crazy shit.
Yeah.
So I think one of their main rules, I think, is just basically no guns, no drugs, no guns.
Okay.
Like, pretty much.
I mean, I think no dead too, but.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't kill anybody.
Right. No permanent death allowed in.
No permanent death. But yeah, I've done some crazy stuff at that dungeon. So yeah. Anyway.
I wanted to ask, because you had mentioned, you said you came out in San Antonio, and then you said that you also started performing at the Goth Club. And that was in San Antonio.
That was in San Antonio, yeah.
Okay. So, like, what was that sequence of events like? And at the San Antonio Goth Club, did you run into any, like, I don't know, weirdness from the fact that you had just come out as trans? Or, I mean, I don't know what the sequence of events was like, so you can fill us in.
Okay, so I had actually come out as trans. When I said come out earlier, I was referring to coming out into the public kink scene. I had originally transitioned, began my transition in 2008, and went full time in 2009. So I'm not sure what every state is different and everything's different, but back when I did it, I had to go through like the 6 months of therapy before I can get hormones, and you know, this still is the route that people end up having to go through.
Right.
Yeah, so I had to go through all that, and then it took like 2 years to full time. And yeah, but when I moved to San Antonio, I was out full time. The only people who had ever known me prior to that knew me as a man prior were my ex-wife's family, and them I had only seen at our wedding. Really, that none of them really knew who I was. But yeah, moving to Chicago was actually the first move I ever did where nobody here, including Diana, knew me prior to transition. So, It's been I'm lucky. You know, I'm lucky in the trans world. Like, and I understand that, and I get it. I'm 5'6". I wear a size 9.5 shoe. You know, I'm 145 pounds. I'm white. You know, I get all the privilege that I have. I understand it. But at the same time, I still, you know, experience the other side of all of that. When I first started transitioning, you know, one of the things is I quickly started, you know, you go to the support groups, you go to the meetings, you see all these other people that you're having the meetings with, and they're transitioning, and you're looking around in the room, you know, and there's this person who's like 300 pounds and African American and like built like a brick shit house, and just like, how is this person going to transition? Not to say they can't, but it's going to be much harder for them. And I saw that, and I appreciated it much, you know, really early on. Right. And I wanted to help. I wanted to help people. I wanted to do what I could. So that's where Silly Trans Woman started, which was my blog. Mm-hmm. It is my blog. It's, I still maintain it. So I started coming up with these articles and posts and like different things, you know, not only my experience, but my perspective on everything. So there's a lot of information that I've collected over the last, 6 years or 7 years that this blog has been going on. Mm-hmm. It's not kinky. There's no kink related stuff on the blog. It's all related to being trans, and you know, there's everything from my silly advice to what looks good on me and what looks good on different types of body types to ranting about stupid things in the news to inspirational quotes to the, you know, a factual explanation of medical, you know, of what hormones do to a male body person and a female body person. So it's got a bunch of stuff. I try to keep all the articles that are factual based, really accessible for people to get to it. But, yeah, that's where Silly Trans Woman came from.
Okay. And that's, I just Googled that. Is that sillytranswoman.blogspot.com or that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Cool. And if you just go to sillytranswoman.com, it'll redirect.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And it's really cool that our community, has resources like that and people who are willing to put themselves out there and put their, experiences, outward and inward of transition on display in ways that are helpful to others, because that can be a really tough thing to do.
Yeah.
Because transition is an extremely intimate thing.
It is. And one of the things I really tried not to do, especially when I first started transitioning, and this is advice I give any trans person, is don't become your transition. Like, your transition is meant to be just what the word defines. This is how I see it, is the word transition is you're going from one place to another. You need to think about what happens in the other. Like, okay, I've gone as far as I want to go as far as physical transformation. I've transitioned. I'm living my life as, you know, as Catherine. Now what? You need to, there needs to be that now what? And that has helped me in the kink world. That has helped me in my career. You know, my end goal was I wanted to graduate college. And I graduated college, and now I have another goal, you know, and it's just life continues. And I think as trans people, we get fixated. We get fixated on our transition, and we start to see the world in reference to our transition. And that can become toxic very quickly, because you start seeing things that aren't there. You start seeing, like, discrimination that may or may not be there, and, like, it becomes harder and harder to separate yourself from it. So,
absolutely.
And I think Diana can talk a little about watching me transition, because I was much different when you first met me than I am now. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can definitely see the difference in her taking comments
really hard in terms of when people would misgender her, which most of the time was accidental. Or,
even in the kink world, this, you know.
Yeah, even in the kink world. And I'd say most of the time it's people who just didn't quite know how to address her, maybe thought she was like cross-dressing instead of being trans, or, you know, or if she was dressing androgynously, some people might misgender her, and she would take it very, very hard. And then, you know, I think as she's sort of grown and come out of this, she sort of just like shrugs it off as like, eh, whatever, you know.
It's interesting because I started out my transition like a lot of trans women do, as hyper femme. And I started my transition like hyper femme. And when I first started transitioning, I would get really offended when people would misgender me and this, that, or the other thing. And I remember the first time I ever went out in public, dressed, there's no other way to say it, but dressed as a girl, right? I was going shopping by myself. And I went to a thrift store and I was trying on all these clothes. And when I went in the dressing room, I could hear the girls snickering outside of the dressing room about me. You know, they were obvious. I could hear what they were saying. They were snickering. And I didn't want to come out of the dressing room. And I didn't come out of the dressing room until I knew they were gone. And I like ran out to my car and, you know, I was kind of crying. And then I thought to myself, I'm not going to let this experience ruin it. So I drove myself to the mall, you know, and I went shopping at the mall, and it turned out to be a totally different experience. It was totally positive. And it was, just, I wasn't going to let two ignorant people's like snickering ruin my identity. And that's kind of how I've tried to frame everything since then. Sometimes it's harder. When I first came out in kink, it was particularly hard when I was being submissive, and people around would misgender me. So it was particularly hard when people misgendered me in the kink community, because I was being submissive and I was being very vulnerable. And I was letting that guard down. We actually did a... there was a GRU here in Chicago last year? And we did, one of the little things I put up on the board was transgender identity is a kink. And this is I created a class out of this that I'm hoping we get to present here pretty soon. Because trans, like Diana was saying, trans identities and kink are strange, right? Because we do have, there are fetishes and everything that are attached to this. Fetishized cross-dressing. There's feminization, like emasculation. There's all these different fetishes that does. So sometimes when people come into the kink world and they see somebody that looks, you know, maybe they look like they're a man dressed as a girl or a girl dressed as a man. But you can't really, you know, something's a little, that little thing is askew, right? You see the Adam's apple in a dress, right? You know, something's different. How do you approach that in a kink world, right? So it's hard because a lot of people come out and they have that fetish where they're looking for like a pre-op cross dresser, like someone who has a penis and just likes to dress as a girl. That's their thing. And, you know, they see me, I'm not their thing, you know? It's like, you know, a lot of times those type of people, they'll misgender people, and it's not malicious though. So it's like, I can talk about this for hours.
I hear you on that. And something I kind of want to touch on, since you're talking about the kink scene and being trans, because there is the kink scene and being trans is that being in the scene, there tends to be a lot of acceptance, although sometimes confusion around whether something is fetishistic behavior or someone's identity. But outside of the kink scene, I kind of see something where, like, I sometimes am careful about whether I'll identify as kinky in some contexts when people know I'm trans, especially given some of the current political climate and social disputes therein, where people are looking on trans people as wanting to, you know, quote unquote, invade women's safe spaces.
I could have got a funny story about this, actually.
Oh, okay. I want to hear the story then.
Okay. So I've had my, so I love to travel. And my goal is to see all 50 states and to deliberately go to every one of the 50 states. And it's funny because like last fall, me and my friend went to Alabama, and I remember one of my friends in Virginia was like, "Don't get hate crimed." I'm like, I'm not going, you know, I'm not going to go get lynched or anything in Alabama. Just, you know, and it turned out to be a blast. Like, it was gorgeous. It was a fun trip. We had some great food in Birmingham. But anyway, this is not that story. Over the weekend, I just went to Mississippi. That was the last state I have east of the Mississippi River to go to. And on the way there, we stopped in Memphis, Tennessee to listen to some blues music and get dinner. And it was, you know, the music was great. If you ever get down to Beale Street, yeah. Bell Street in Memphis, and you love blues music, that's the place to go. Anyway, so we're in this bar, and I get up, and you can't really see which one, there's two bathrooms, you can't really tell which one's which. And my transition has been interesting because I started out hyper femme. I've kind of gone a little bit more towards the masculine woman type, tomboyish, like gotcha. I'm sometimes androgynous, but I still look, you know, I still present as a woman, I wear women's clothes. But it's more androgynous, more butch. Anyway, I get up to go to the bathroom, and I'm looking at the bathrooms, and I kind of step in to one of the bathrooms to look at the sign to see what it is. And this waiter comes around the corner. I don't know where he came from. He mm-hmm. just came out of, like, lightning. He's like, "Ma'am, you cannot be in that bathroom."
I was like, wow.
Yeah, I stepped 1 foot into the men's room.
Interesting. Like,
so it was like, this is the first bathroom experience I've had right. As a trans woman, and it was backwards, and I don't know how to process it. Right. Like, I got kicked out of the men's room. I don't understand that. I wasn't worried. I have my driver's license, and I've gone, you know, through all the paperwork, and, you know, you're in the South, you got to be aware of these things in the South. And we were in Mississippi. Right. There was one bathroom in one of the gas station that said, no man, only woman in bathroom. And it was yeah. So like, evidently you could only have one male or female in the bathroom. Yeah, no, but that was, I didn't know how to process that. Cause I'm like, I'm sorry. But no, he was adamant that I, as a woman, was not allowed in the men's room.
Yeah. There's some and I've had maybe one or two similar, not quite as intense experiences where I'm somewhere unfamiliar. I'm walking down a hallway towards dressing rooms or bathrooms or whatever. And I'm kind of looking, you know, to try to see which side is the women's side. And you know, some staff member who works there will be like, "Oh, ma'am, on your right." And and it's kind of it's a little bit shocking because I'm afraid that they're going to be pointing me towards the men's room because I'm trans. Yep. And then I realize they're not. And it's like, "Oh my God, yay, I'm passing," which is kind of exciting.
Yeah. Well, I think when it comes to bathrooms, and as a trans person, it's scary. Like, I have a hard time sometimes, depending on where I am. And because, like I said, I travel a lot and I go to a lot of these places. But by and large, people don't care. Most people don't care. It's a very vocal minority that do care. And my advice to people in that regard, and what I put on my blog, too, is when you're in doubt, if there's no family restroom, if it's a single stall bathroom, just go in the bathroom that fits your gender. And what are they going to do, kick you out? You know, but if it's a multi-stall bathroom, my advice is to always ask. If you ask somebody, go up to the cash register, even if the sign is right there on the side of the wall that says restroom. Like I did this in Texas, because when we lived in Texas, there were laws in place. Anywhere I went, when I went to a restaurant, I'd ask where the restroom was, even if I could see the sign, because the law in Texas is like you have to have permission to use if you're trans, to use the bathroom, right? So if they say it's on the left and they're pointing to the ladies' room, then they gave me permission and I'm going to go in there. If they tell me it's the wrong one, then I don't want to be in there anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm just going to go somewhere else. So, you know, it's always ask. And then, you know, that doesn't take care of any incidents that can happen in the bathroom. Right. People can still like yell at you. But I mean, that's the minority of people. I mean, most people aren't going in the bathroom to pick a fight. Just like 99.999999% trans people aren't going in the bathroom to have sex. You know, there's always going to be that one idiot in the crowd, but just because somebody's trans doesn't mean they're not an idiot.
Oh yeah, every group has its imbeciles. Like, that's just a universal.
Yeah, so, yeah,
unfortunately,
and every
we are like at the top of the hour now. So we're going to have to wrap this up so that the next show can go on. But I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and for your roommate. So we actually got 2/3 of Bad Kitty Bondage on the show, which was really cool. So thank you so much for spending some time on the air with me tonight. This was really exciting.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Y'all have a good evening, and thank you again.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
And I will be back next week. I think I'm going to have to pre-record a show, depending on what the studio is doing. So I'm not sure what my plan is for next week, everyone, but I will post on Twitter about it. You can follow None of Aboves, NoneofAboves, and that's where I'll usually tweet about the show. That Twitter specifically for the show. So I bid everyone adieu, and I will catch you next week. Take care.